evening and welcome to What Should I Watch, episode 24.
Does that mean that this episode is all going to be real time and that we need to shoot somebody in the leg? Ideally, a hostage.
Bloop, bloop, bloop.
Yeah, they would have in. So we're obviously making jokes about 24, starring Kiefer Sutherland, right, where he was this, you know, gritty FBI agent who would stop at nothing to protect the country he loved.
That's right. They always got behind him, but he got a bit gritty in bits. But you knew he's just doing it for the good of the rest of us.
He always went too far.
He's just over the line.
I used to, when it was on and I was really into it, when it was really good, like in those middle seasons, like the one where he becomes a junkie for the crack.
I like that.
Season intended. 5, I think. I used to always say, like, the thing to do is just ask yourself, what would Jack Bauer do in this situation? Mm. The problem with that was always he would shoot the hostage in the leg. And there's very few situations, unfortunately, where you can apply that.
Or he'd always pull the flex out of a light fitting and, you know, apply it to someone's leg, you know, as well. That's the other one.
Yeah. Torture them. Yeah. He had a penchant for torture.
He did, yeah. Yeah. Everyone's going to die if you don't tell me. One of those. He's a bit of a drama queen, in fairness. Yeah. Good show at the time, though.
That was a great show.
Yeah. Speaking of good shows, podcast shows. Heard about Joe Rogan's jiggery pokery going on this week, did you? Speaking of podcasts, I think we should address this. I think we need to release a 9-minute video giving our thoughts on it.
Yeah. So Neil Young, strangely, started it all. Neil Young said he would take his music off Spotify if they didn't get rid of Joe Rogan.
Ultimatum. So immediately, goodbye.
Spotify let him take his music off Spotify. So, and then all kinds of relevant people started showing screenshots of them canceling their Spotify subscription on Twitter. And I'm like, oh man. So the first thing I did was go through all of my social media feeds to make sure I'd never said at any point that I like Joe Rogan or Neil Young. So we don't want to get caught in the blast radius of this, folks.
We don't want to be associated with and all our thoughts and blah, 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 our own. Yeah. This kind of kicked off due to the numbers coming out, you know, the week before that. You know, the fact that Joe has, you know, 200 million listeners and CNN has like 60, you know.
Yeah.
That's where that started. People are going, oh, it was all misinformation, but it was two podcasts ignoring the, what has he got now? 800, 900, 1,000? How many, what number is he up to? You know, it's ridiculous.
I think it is ridiculous. So I've been watching with interest every night what kind of tweets are going around about this, like, and trying to see who's on whose side, you know. And like, I did the same thing when like the Trump election was happening, and my favorite tweet from back then was Bryan Cranston, the actor from Breaking Bad, said that if Trump got elected, he would leave the United States forever. He's currently still living in the United States.
But
the best tweet I saw about this was someone goes, but if they take Joe Rogan, off Spotify, then he'll just be checks notes. Oh yeah, the biggest podcaster in the world.
Yeah.
he was plenty big funny. Before he went on Spotify.
What was Neil expecting though? Like what, that they're going to take him off Spotify? What, going to cancel his contract? Could you imagine how much that would cost? Could you imagine how much that would cost them compared to how much Neil is earning them? So financially, it's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much Neil Young earns them, but like, I try and assume that everyone's doing things for the right reasons. Like, I'm assuming that he was being a conscientious objector and he felt that.
It wasn't good for the people.
Good for people.
Neither did Joni Mitchell, actually. She's gone as well. Taylor Swift went before, but she came back when she realized no one gave a shite. Did you know that? Yeah, she did it for a better cause, though.
The word on the street is that Neil Young has significant investment in Pfizer.
Is that so?
Oh, is that so?
Conspiracy theory, Mike.
All right. He also has his own. Remember, he's tried to launch his own Spotify called Sana, was it?
Sana.
A few years ago. And it didn't work.
I could have guessed, or I should have guessed, that you would connect it somehow to a conspiracy. But the best, most famous tweet around this was James Blunt said, that if Spotify didn't get rid of Joe Rogan, he would release more music on the platform.
That was brilliant. I saw that last night.
So yeah, he put that out himself.
So. Yeah, I know. And he said, what did he say? You're beautiful? Hashtag you're beautiful or something. Hashtag
beautiful too, I think he said. Yeah, that's it. Which was hashtag me too, obviously.
It's amazing the way you get laid. Isn't that right, Mike? I mean, you do so much charity work and then you shag one sheep.
What happened to a bishop,
poor,
Steve?
Poor Al Mike. Yep. That guy. So I'm kind of in the, you know, you can't make an ultimatum and ruin someone's gig kind of thing. Like, I don't know anyone that's listened to it. Listen to all the people giving out about the misinformation. Everyone knows this misinformation. What's the problem? You know, like, I don't know anyone that's went, oh yeah, that guy had some, you know, maybe we should.
To be honest, I think Joe addressing it this morning, I think he went a bit too far. He kind of said that, like, he came on and he said, I just like to talk to people and have interesting conversations, right? Mm. And I think if that is the premise of the show going in, great, right? And if Spotify want to put a disclaimer on it to say these are the people on their podcast views and nobody else, that's fine too.
Entertainment purposes, yeah.
That's fine too, right? Yeah, yeah. But then he started saying, and you know, I'm going to do a bit more research and maybe bring on the counter argument closer to the one that... you know, if I have two sides to a story, I'll bring people from each side on closer together. So you hear both sides of the story. It doesn't sound like I'm pushing one agenda over the other. I thought that was a bit much. I think you should have just left it to say, I'm just going to have good conversations. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. He didn't need to. Yeah.
But
I think what he was doing was appeasing people as well by saying that.
I don't know if he's an appeaser. I think he thinks that's what he should do. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think
I'm disagreeing with that. I don't think it is. Anyway, speaking of podcasts,
we're not finished yet.
Oh, Jesus, here we go. Oh,
sorry. Who's funding Joe Rogan, Mike?
Mr. Joe Rogan, I thought today it was a bit fucking John Cena with his whole fucking
Chinese apology.
Fucking Chinese. I was like, come on, man. You had the higher ground here. Fucking stick with it. I don't think he should have even addressed it. You know, it's a problem for Spotify, a commercial decision, essentially, they have to make.
That would have been better. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought 80% of what he said was a good response.
Really? Yeah. Thought it showed weakness. It really did.
I thought it was balanced and reasonable. I think he gave up some ground, but gained a lot.
Yeah,
I think that's
And in terms of the misinformation, I don't think there was any misinformation on the particular podcast in question.
We found one.
Talking about, I'm talking about two. Yeah. Well, there was, Mike, there was, but they corrected it afterwards. Like, so there's two episodes that people are complaining about. The first one was with Dr. McCullough, Rory McCullough, is it? So He corrected himself, actually, when Robert Malone came on a couple of weeks later, who's the other podcaster complained about. Yep. McCullough said on the podcast, unequivocally, you cannot catch COVID twice.
Yeah.
And then he sent a message the next time with his buddy Malone to say, tell them that Omicron is different enough that you can catch that again. You can get regular COVID and then you can get Omicron. So it's not this misinformation, misinformation implies intentionally misleading somebody. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just information that person thought was true.
Superseded by the latest information, almost like how science works.
So is he talking about the same strain?
I guess, Steve, I don't know.
I think
the context made it sound to me like he knew about everything up as far as Delta. And once you've got that, you're not getting it again. But then when Omicron came along, because he used the Omicron strain in that speech or that update by Malone. Like,
he did name three or four other people that he had to counter opinions, though, as well, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, he had other people on, yeah. Like, do you remember when, what's the comedian? He's Boston Irish, the angry guy.
Bill Burr
was on. Do you remember when Bill Burr said, Joe, you need to leave the experting to the experts?
Yeah.
Which I think was great for Bill Burr to do, because obviously they're friends. Like,
We
all need a friend to call you out. And I think since that, Joe has been a bit more careful to say, you know, with my zero medical degrees,
mm-hmm.
than he was beforehand. Like,
What do I know? I'm a meathead. Yeah.
Yeah. But he has done a couple of things that you would wonder about. Like, do you remember when he did the emergency podcast about ivermectin? Was it ivermectin?
Don't know. See, I didn't watch that one. Yeah, I heard about it.
Yeah, he did. He did an emergency. I could be wrong now saying that it's ivermectin, but it was about some medical treatment that is legitimate, right? Mm-hmm. But he did an emergency podcast because he felt he had to get the word out. Is that your job? I don't know.
You know.
Because if you're doing that, you're weighing in behind something, you know?
Yeah.
Like if Pfizer did that, you know?
Yeah. It's their business.
But Pfizer's a bad example because
they have done it.
It's a bad example because they're trying to sell stuff. It's called and advertising. Advertising when they do it, but it's almost like, it's a bit like the Late Late Show on Friday night.
Oh, good Lord. I did see.
We need to give people context. Yeah, I need to give people context of that. So in Ireland, right, the flagship chat show was always the Late Late Show for what seems to me like hundreds of years.
It's the longest running chat show in the world, in fact.
Longest running chat show in the world, though it's particularly.
1641 was the first episode. 1641.
Yeah.
The Cromwellian conquest.
Around your 40th birthday.
Wow. So, recently in Ireland, an awful lot of coronavirus restrictions have been eased. I know people can congregate again, and a lot of normalcy is starting to be restored. Right. So there was a studio audience for the Late Late Show for the first time in quite a while. So when they started the show, there was this whole hurrah kind of session to start with. Everyone had tricolors and everyone was standing on their feet singing an old Irish song and just celebrating the fact that they were back, which most people in the country have put down to government orchestrated propaganda, and the opposition have absolutely gone to town on it.
That is so funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
That's hilarious. Of course, Sinn Féin
have gone completely mental talking about how this is just propaganda. It's going, you're using RTE, the Irish TV channel that's funded by the government. You're using RTE as a propaganda arm. This is not right. How dare you?
RTE has always been a propaganda.
Yeah, of course they are.
It's the foundation of the state.
They're paying for it. Like,
they don't call it Pravda for nothing.
I'm just telling you what the Sinn Féin
is. Hilarious. That's hilarious.
Now might be a good time just to kind of do a handbrake turn onto our podcast and to tell you what we're going to talk about next week, right? Because I think it's hilarious. Next week, we're going to review the Tinder Swindler.
Oh, are we?
The Tinder Swindler.
I know of it. Yeah, yeah. Mm. I was wondering. Yeah. I saw that came out and I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty.
So this guy masquerading as being a diamond salesman cons a load of women he meets on Tinder out of a lot of money.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're going to bring that to you. So don't worry about watching it. Sit back. Wait till Friday, the second Friday in February, and we'll be along to tell you whether you should waste your time or not. So who wasted time this week? Anyone?
Wasted time?
Oh, yeah. Who's responsible?
For which one?
Which one? What do you mean, which one?
Well, I know that I wasted time on some more Korean shows.
I want to know who put Lily and...
Oh, that's not the name of it.
Something.
Lily and Astrid Saved the World? Something.
Astrid
like
and Lily Saved the World. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, now I know what you're talking about.
Oh, it was you. It was you.
It was me. 100%.
How dare you?
How dare you,
Mark? How dare you?
Here we go. Right, here's the synopsis. A young woman destined to slay vampires, demons, and other infernal creatures deals with her life fighting evil with the help of her friends. Only that's not the synopsis. That is the synopsis of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that came out. Anyone put a year on it? When did the first episode come out?
1997.
You're so close. Like, so close. 97. So imagine.
I do actually know a man who got divorced around that time, and he recovered from his divorce by watching 5 series of Buffy.
That would do it. That would bring you back. So I mentioned Buffy with the reason. I'll give you the actual synopsis now. So IMDb tells us that Astrid Unlimited Save the World is about high school is hard enough when you're different, but when an outcast, BFFs Astrid and Lily accidentally crack open a portal to a terrifyingly quirky monster dimension, it gets a lot more complicated. So, I would like to say they're basically the same thing, but you have to abstract a lot before they become similar, right? But they are two very different takes on a similar thing. So basically, it's about empowered women fighting the creatures of evil, okay? So we have Astrid and Lily on one hand, and we have Buffy played by Sarah Michelle Gellar on the other. And like, so, right, I'll be honest now, right? I'm never going to watch this again. I didn't think it was any good, right? But I enjoyed the contrast between the two shows a lot. So you have Buffy gets super strength, super speed, and reflexes. And she becomes, you know, she heals faster. She's more resistant to damage. All of the things you need, right, to fight evil. Astrid got a twitchy leg when there's a monster around. Doesn't seem like a fairly balanced proposition. No. And I think, what did the other girl get? Butterflies in her tummy or something? I can't remember. Something like that anyway.
I think she shat herself when there was...
But yeah, so look, through a series of misadventures, these two girls wind up accidentally opening a portal. The only way they can close it is if they hunt a load of monsters and put different body parts into a magic box, right? Mm-hmm. Which does sound like a bit of a honey trap, but there you are. So what did you think? I've already given the game away to say that I didn't think it was great, but what did you think yourselves?
Desperate. It's desperate.
Falling. Jesus. Yeah.
Now, look, obviously, very obviously, we are not the target demographic.
Yeah. That's YA all over the place, yeah.
Oh, my God. But
it's for the young adults.
No, it is for, I'd say, max 15, 16-year-olds, you know.
Who aren't good-looking.
That's what I was most shocked about, was that Mark would put something on like this, where it's not full of just absolute models.
I don't know
models.
What you mean.
Yeah.
But that's not the criteria I use to put stuff on the list. I just don't put subtitles on the list. So if you're saying there's a correlation, then okay. it was not I who said it.
Yeah, I did not enjoy this at all. I thought it was terrible.
The second half of the episode is better. So we're talking about the first episode, right?
Really? Well, the main monster in this episode, I thought was nearly a saving grace. It was kind of cool.
It was pretty cool. He was very Buffy-ish. It was when I saw him that I started thinking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
He was half Buffy-ish, half it puts the lotion in the basket.
Yeah, he was very well acted. I'll look up who it is so we can give the props. But so at the start, when they're trying to figure out what's going on and they're having their teenage woes, I found that a bit it was well trodden ground. You know, like most young adult TV shows do exactly
very,
that.
Very samey. Yeah,
very, very. It's when the monsters started to appear and that kind of stuff happened, it started to diverge a small bit from everything else that was standard fare. And I thought the last act was actually all right. Like, they're decent actresses, these girls, you know. It's just going to take a bit more for them to show that, maybe.
Mike, what did you think?
I'm with Mark on this. It was appalling. You know, it was just so much of the same ground over and over. It had a shocking lack of Sarah Michelle Gellar. And I think nearly everything was a fat joke. You know, which was maybe funny the first couple of times, but it got old very quickly. You know, I don't think they really gave them a chance to grow into somebody where you'd be rooting for the character as opposed to the joke. Which is, it's kind of missing an open goal there. You know, I know. Like they're trotting old ground, but they could have at least given something to the characters in the state that they're in that is you know, new. And I just didn't see it.
Yeah. Like one of the main character development points, I suppose, is there's a conversation in the middle of the episode between one of the girls and a former friend of hers,
Megan.
The one girl who got popular, you know, like, and that was a decent scene. I thought the chemistry there was really good. But the problem about it is it's in every single teenager show.
Yeah.
We used to be friends, but then you got popular and I didn't. So now we're not friends. Like, it's just everywhere. So even though I thought they did a good job, it was well balanced. It was like I said, there's good acting in this. And the dialogue was all good. It's just, you've seen it all before, you know. Maybe there's young adults out there that haven't, you know, and that having this kind of Buffy-ish element of girls like them fighting monsters is going to appeal, but I don't know.
Question. There's someone called Jerry Hall in this. Is that Jerry Hall, Spice Girls, Jerry Hall? No.
Or
Mick Jagger, Jerry Hall, sorry. Yeah, not Jerry, what's her face? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Just wondering.
No, I think she's probably in deep freeze at this stage.
No, Jerry's timeless. Fine wine. What was I going to say? Yeah, look at the
1841.
The interactions between the girls, you know, seem genuine and believable. You know, they're two messers.
Yeah.
And that part of the scripting and story was good. And I'd say if it was a story about those two just mucking around in high school-y stuff, would have been a lot better. But obviously, that's not what the show is after. I don't think it worked in this one. I thought it was horrendous. It really wasn't. I this was a real force watch for me. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. What should I watch? Not this.
No, this is definitely shouldn't watch. Let us save you the time. Don't go near it.
Moving along.
I wonder, quite traumatized, Steve. Have you talked to anybody about this?
No, I'm still working it through in my head. It was only last night, you know, it's early days yet. It's tough on all of us here.
But Steve, just to know, you're not alone. Thanks, reach out and talk.
Yeah, yeah. Going through the five stages, you know, angry denial, you know.
If I could jump in there, Steve, if you don't mind, I've recently finished The US Office.
No way.
Yeah, 9 seasons of 20 odd episodes a season, and I finally finished it.
That is some investment of time, Mark.
It is ridiculous. And do you know what? I think it was worth it.
Wow.
There are very few episodes of that show I didn't laugh at. And then the very last episode was very much a victory lap, but it was a well-balanced one. Mm. The real finale, to my mind, was the second last episode. And that was a beautiful bit of TV. Brought a tear to the eye now. I'm not shy about saying. Very good. It was tears in the final episode too. But I did think it was a bit like thrown in so they could bring back everybody who had ever been in the show. And it was kind of good. And then, so Michael Scott, played by Brick from Anchorman, his name escapes me at the moment. Steve Carell was the boss of the office. He leaves at some point during it. And they brought him back in the last episode.
Oh, did they? Right.
Yeah, but they brought him back in the right way. So, like, obviously he has star power, right? He's a bigger actor than most of the other people in the show, with the possible exception of John Krasinski. But I want him to come back because I love his character. But I didn't want him to come back and take over the show because he's been away so long, he doesn't deserve it. But they did that really well. He came back, he did his couple of things, and then they didn't really focus anymore on the carry on with the people who've been there.
Right.
On the people who stayed, basically. Yeah. Yeah. So I recommend it. Thoroughly, thoroughly recommend it.
Okay. Do you remember that somewhere that we watched last week?
Yes.
No, I watched the next one.
And?
Actually, I watched episode one again with my better half.
Accompanied, yeah. I'm going to do the same thing.
I was like, you have to see this. You'll love it, you know. She did. And she was like, is there another one? I was like, there sure is. So we watched the second one. Really enjoyed that as well. So I'd say that'll be appearing here weekly.
Yeah, you can give us updates on that.
For sure.
It's definitely a good show. I'm going to do the same things you did now and watch again at my better half and see if it's a runner.
Tell me about Servant.
Oh, yeah. That's a weird show.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
Man, that's there. I
haven't watched it yet, though. Yeah. What should I watch? Should I watch this?
You should definitely watch it. You should watch it, right? So this show is written by M. Night Shyamalan.
It's in season 3, though, isn't it? Should we start from the start or get a catch up and then get into this season?
I can tell you from the start. So a Philadelphia couple hire a nanny, right? And there is something strange going on, right? Now that is as spoiler free as you can get it, because there's lots of things to be spoiled if you've never watched the show, right? At the end of the last season, season 2, something really weird happened to the nanny, right?
Yeah.
And it seemed like she'd disappeared, been abducted or something. I'm not sure exactly, right? And potentially it was with, well, it wasn't an abduction. Potentially she went willingly. I don't even know, right? Because it was so weird. At the start of this episode, they're all back in the house and things are just carrying on, right?
Yeah.
And I really think I need to go and watch the last episode of season 2 again, because every so often they flash back to something with her. Now, she's completely PTSD now. She's afraid to go outside the house at all, which is brilliant. They do some really good things with this. It's one of these shows that keeps you on edge the whole way through, because everything just isn't right and you're waiting for the big reveal. And the characters are so rich and so good. Like the mother of the house is this vapid news anchor for a local TV station who loves herself very, 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 very much and struggles really to care about anything else, but she does care about her child and some people in her family occasionally, you know. And then you have this other girl who's the servant. Well, she's not servant. She's a nanny. Who's a complete contrast to that. And it's just really interesting. There's religious undertones. There's a bit of supernatural and the occult in there. Like as soon as the episodes drop, I'm watching them. Like, I can't wait for the next one. It's number 2 to my continuing love for 1883, which is still going.
Okay.
Are you still watching that?
Oh, I cannot get enough of that show. There was an episode on Sunday night again. Brilliant.
See, I dropped it after our last chat about it.
I'm it's not
for everybody. What episode are you up to?
6, maybe?
Yeah, still, I'm still laughing at your... Then I saw some water. It was a river, you know.
She's still at that, like.
Ah, Jesus.
And I knew I would never come to grips with this, Leonard. So one day I was.
And this is a tough old mistress. Yeah, what?
Oh, she's so good, that wee actress. She's brilliant. Like, there was kind of a mid-season finale there before Christmas, and then it took 2 weeks off, and it came back just pretty more than 2 weeks off.
Oh, okay.
And back, and that episode was really good. It was a great place to stop, you know. Mm. And the repercussions of the events are fairly far-reaching. But it's very good. There's so many, like, for example, right, in this most recent episode that I watched on Sunday, a new cowboy turned up. Right.
Okay.
And he established his character immediately. Right.
Really?
And after him being on screen for 5 minutes, I felt like I knew him and I liked him. You know, in my head, I was going, this is really brilliant writing and acting that they can do that.
Yeah.
Because he's a new character. But now I want to see what he does, like, along with all the other people who I want to find out what happens to. But yeah,
okay, cool.
1883 is such a good show. Anyway, Servant also, great show.
Character rich. Mike, Train to Busan 2.
Don't mock me, Mark.
Is this a peninsula? It's named it, right?
Yeah.
Bando.
2020 it came out, but it kind of got overlooked in the whole pandemic shite.
I
have the synopsis here from IMDb. IMDb calls it Bando. A zombie virus has, in the last 4 years, spread to all South Korea. 4 Koreans in Hong Kong sailed through the blockade to Incheon for $20 million on a truck. Does that synopsis do it justice, Michael?
Yeah, kind of. So basically, it is the aftermath of Train to Busan. So obviously, after the train got to Busan, they were all fucked.
Yeah.
very few people survived. What little did went to Hong Kong. And there's some quite funny racial undertones going on there, or overtones indeed. They're not well welcomed by the locals in Hong Kong. And they form their own underclass within the city. So in order to try and survive, a couple of these guys get involved with the local triads or yeah. whatnot.
The mafia.
The mafia. And they say, listen, we can make your life a bit better if you go back to Korea, and we'll give you GPS coordinates, go back to Korea, get this truck that's full of fucking money, and bring it back to us, and you'll get a percentage. So then they get a team together of all basically Korean survivors.
Bands back together, yeah.
They put the band back
together. Yeah, yeah.
They get in a boat and they say, right, let's go do this. And the story is, it's kind of a mixture between a zombie movie and a heist movie. So they're trying to track down the cash and avoid the zombies at the same time.
So this is very like Army of the Dead then, from Netflix.
Not unlike it at all. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, indeed. Although, not with such good looking people in it.
Again, Mike, this is what you say. Or as Jesus would say, it is you who say it. good old King of the Jews.
Do you say it? It's not what you say. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
I'm not going to rise to that.
Yeah, yeah.
He did.
Jesus, he's on fire tonight.
I had two options there. I could have gone with he did, or that's what she said.
So that's the good part. The bad part is it's not very entertaining.
Disappointing. Yeah,
the pacing is very poor. They spend a lot of time just looking around at their shoes, and you know, there's threats from people who are still there.
All right,
adapted to the new environment. There's threats from the zombies who are obviously still there. But there's no real. There's never any real question that they're going to get it done.
Yeah. Is there did they introduce any strange rules around the zombies, or are they just straight up?
No, they just
straight speeders. Up zombies. Okay,
there were speeders in the first movie, weren't they?
They were chasing the train. Fast. Yeah.
They didn't seem to have slowed down any in the last 4 years.
Hey, did the wrestler guy that graduated to the MCU make an appearance?
No. There's a distinct lack of people that we loved from the first movie.
Ah, okay.
Well, he died in the first film, but I was wondering if they had his body there being a super zombie or something, because he was fairly
There's very little crossover. I mean, it struck me as kind of, we're just trying to make some cash out of this.
Another movie about the same scenario. Okay, gotcha.
We're
going to talk about something like that later on, actually.
And they did. I know Steve has talked about it before, the Korean obsession with just being really sad.
Yeah.
Did they do the looking at their feet walking slowly to show how sad they were, like a toddler?
No, it was someone very, very close and very, very dear to them.
Have to look at the ground for that.
Yeah, and it was very tragic, I'm sure, whatever happened.
There's a big climactic scene at the end that is, it's probably 7 minutes of screen time, but it probably feels like 2.5 hours in your life. Being exhausted from you watching it. It's like, oh no, this is so sad. and at the end of the day, it's not. you know what? It's not sad. It's just the way it is.
It's just life and it's not the apocalypse. I'm sure it'll be any day now.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, overall, it's not a great movie and it's not a great sequel.
Just watch Army of the Dead. It's a good movie.
That's a much better movie than this one.
And no subtitles in it, so you don't have to read it.
Yep.
So,
speaking of zombies in South Korea and subtitles.
Yeah.
We also watched some a new TV show that is Netflix's. I got on every screen that I seem to flick through. Doesn't matter what profile it went to. It's called All of Us Are Dead.
Well, it's actually called Jigyeom Yuri Hakigo Enion.
He spent the time to learn it off. I love you, Mark.
Nearly.
I think any Korean person will say that's exactly how they say it.
So this is set in high school. There is a weird science teacher who's, rumor has it, he's a bit of a genius. His son is a bit sick though. Mm. And his son seems to have the rage. And so that's how we're sort of introduced to it all. Mm. This is... you'll know by like just even the posters, let's say, for it. It's a zombie flick, a zombie series. But yeah, that's how it starts anyway. And so we watched episode one. And a lot of build up, a lot of character development in this one. And I was kind of going, okay, get on with it. But when things kicked off, I sort of went, right. Now I'm more invested than if it was just a bunch of nameless and faceless and personalityless people running around the place.
I would argue they remained faceless and personalityless. But I'll wait till you're finished. Please tell us more.
It's interesting. It's a fast zombies, and it's a viral thing, and it happens quickly. People turn very quickly.
Hmm.
So, what did we think?
Well, maybe we talk about the positives first, right? So, I thought that Jigyeom Yuri Hakigo Enion did a good job in setting up the tension of the coming outbreak. So, like, we all know zombie movies now. We know what the format is for your standard zombie flick, right? So, they made good use of the setting, and I guess they're going to pull in a lot of young adults. Because they've seen it happening in a territory that's familiar to them in the high school, right? And then all of us watching know that soon there's going to be running and screaming. Mm. But before it starts, I thought they did a decent job of pacing that. Mm. So that was good. That was good. I thought once the outbreak happens, like you mentioned, Steve, I did think that action was decent. That they managed the tension well. And it was fairly ratcheted up once things actually kicked off. So I think that was all good, all good things. The bad things was, and you'd have to forgive me, of course I watched this dubbed, and they spent no time on translating it into English because there's no way that the Korean dialogue is what I was hearing in English. Well, that's a pity because I don't speak Korean, right? So come on, put in a bit of effort.
You don't read either.
I don't want to read. We've talked about this before. I don't want to read, right? I don't want to look down to see what they're saying and look up and go, oh, well, I missed his face expression while he was saying that.
You should sit further away from the TV, maybe.
Mark goes, you know, peripheral vision.
I know.
Can't do it. Can't do it. So there was that. I didn't find a lot of what happened in the school in the normal sense of the word, like the interactions with the regular teachers and the classmates, didn't really seem all that the way that school kids acted to me, right? There was one or two characters that stood out. There was one guy who the teacher caught not listening, and there was a good scene where he was pretending that he had heard what she said, but he actually didn't. I said, well, that happens for sure. That happens in schools. That was good. But that kind of stood out because there was an awful lot of things that don't represent high school life, I felt, right? I know I'm not in high school anymore, but I do feel like I understand how teenagers act and how they treat one another. And it just didn't, a lot of it didn't come across as real to me. So that, it kind of had lost me.
15 last Thursday.
So look, that kind of lost me because we had to go through quite a bit of that. It was interesting to see what the dad was up to, the dad who's this genius science teacher. That bit was interesting. But anytime they went to the school or hung around with the kids, I was going, I was engaged for the action. I'll never watch any more of this. And I don't thank you for forcing me to watch this one. But I didn't like it, but it's not without some merit.
Mike.
I'm kind of on the fence with this one because I don't know where they're going with it.
Yeah.
On the surface, it seems like almost like the Lillian Astridge, you know, high school general bullshit going on, shiny, happy people and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's better than that.
But then...
Actually, it's not very shiny, happy people now, as I remember. But anyway, go on,
really, really dark stuff in it.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
like, there's some bullying stuff, and I'm thinking, like, this extreme. Is really not fucking suitable for a lot of people to be watching.
Yeah.
Don't you censor me.
Like, it's...
Did you think you are Neil Young?
You know, on the surface, it looks like Buffy, but then it starts getting into fucking the hostel and
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, did you... You didn't do that. No, you're not doing that. So I'm struggling with the tone of it. If it picked a side,
that's what broke my immersion though. Exactly what you're describing. Like, maybe you put your finger on it better than I did. Maybe it's because they couldn't seem to decide what story they were telling. Are these like the children of gangsters conditioned to live in a prison type environment, or are they actual fucking high school kids? Because I was assuming they were high school kids because that's what we're led to believe. And then they start acting completely different. Mm-hmm. And then I was kind of going, well, this is just not right. Like, this doesn't seem real to me now.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. It's all fairly standard in terms of infection and stuff like that. The action is pretty good.
Great scene in the cafeteria, I thought.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh,
indeed.
Cool. Yeah.
And was it the library as well? There was some.
Yeah.
For myself, I always focus on the animals. I love that little fucking psycho hamster.
That kid had class.
Yeah.
He's going places. I don't know if I'm going to watch anymore.
I definitely will. So I'll let you know.
Of course you will.
Yeah.
The reason being, initially...
It's Korean.
I thought it was going to be contained within the school and that kind of thing. But then, it's not a spoiler, I guess, because it was one of the posters and it shows them in Seoul. So it spreads.
Yeah.
So... Then obviously we saw in the episode where people start wandering off campus and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's where I think it's going to get interesting. I want to see where this is going, you know, mm-hmm. because they can't contain it now and get rid of it because it's out, you know, unless they do a Bruce Willis type wall, you know, or something like that. What was it called? Oh, no, it wasn't Bruce Willis. What's your man's name with the long hair?
Donald Trump?
No, the old 80s escape from LA situation, you know.
Kurt Russell,
that's it. Yeah. What did you call this again? Did you call it Jigamuri Jongyun?
I think you'll find it's Jigamuri Hakigoyunyun.
Hakionyun. Yeah. So that means Jigam means now, Uri means us. And Hakion is a school. So now our school, which
translates perfectly into all of us are dead.
Which is isn't an original series, by the way. This is it's based on a webtoon.
Okay,
you mean other people had to live the same pain we did before?
It was huge. It was huge. And that's why I like there are people that are now discussing, oh, they left this character out and they inserted this one. And, you know, that down to that kind of level, discussing the difference between the live series. So
interesting.
Or dead, whichever you want. anyway, I thought it was well produced. I thought, story is grand. I would have had issues with the interactions between students and teachers and that kind of thing. But I think we're beyond that now. And I do agree that the kids are acting a bit more than kids. They're acting, more adulty than you'd expect them to be at that age.
And so hardened criminals who...
Yeah, some of those guys, like one of them was like a mafia boss, the Don, you know? He's just sitting
he's
there.
He's like 16 years old. Yeah.
You know, and he has one foot up on something like on a tin of paint with his elbow on it, just leaning, going, just nodding. Yeah, get rid of him.
If you put it in a prison yard, though,
yeah,
if you put it in a prison yard, it would have made perfect sense. But that was my problem. Like, I was going like, that's kids don't do that. Like, they're not sophisticated enough at that age, you know?
And same at the start, the bullying at the start, that was a bit extreme OTT for people who are still going to high school.
Yeah, you know? And haven't dropped out to sell drugs.
And such a nice high school as well at that. You know what I mean?
Sounds like we all picked up on this then. But sure, like you said, Steve, maybe this is the slingshot that's going to set
the thing. For the rest of it. Because like we saw in, for example, Squid Game, they're always going to have the bad guy. They're going to have the weird girl or the weird guy. You know what I mean? They have all these stereotypes that are intermingled with the population, you know, and that's what they're using to further the story. I'm going to watch another one of these anyway. Yeah. I'm hoping, based on how popular the first webtoon was, that this one's going to be good, you know. So I guess they've already run the story, so we'll see.
Report back. Let us know how it goes.
Okay. So
you can probably are you saying you would recommend this to people with better peripheral vision than me?
I recommend this to people who have better peripheral vision and like zombie stuff. Yeah. I'm hoping that the time invested in the characters. I'm hoping that the time invested in the character development pays off. It's starting to, in my opinion, but I hope it pays off later.
Like hopefully the characters that didn't fit in the high school make it interesting.
Exactly that. Okay, so last thing we saw this the Gilded Age.
Right, Mike, explain yourself.
Now, Mike, I wasn't expecting this from you. I was like, did Mark put this down for Mike?
It was like something I would put on.
Yeah, tell us, Mike, where did you find this?
So many microaggressions in one little passage. It's almost like you resent me for having had the temerity to put it on.
Just surprised at how cultured you are, Mike, really.
We're not angry, Mike. We're just surprised.
We're just... No explosions, no zombies, no, but Jesus. Come on, Mike, explain yourself. What's going on here?
So what is it? What's the Gilded Age?
The Gilded Age is a story set in New York around the turn of the 1900s, early 1900s. And it's specifically set in Manhattan, a very, very rich part of the town. And it is full of old money. And there is another family have just decided to move in who have made a fortune on, I think it's railroads. And they decided to build themselves a mansion on the same street as all the old money. And as they move in, they quickly discover that having money isn't quite enough to be accepted into the society of polite people on this particular street. And the story is essentially the conflict between old and new money. What is deemed to be classy? What is the world that was versus the world that will be?
Yeah, they're Puritan. Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's, yeah, it's a, I suppose, a coming of age story between the world of colonial America hitting industrial America, and how the two forces will collide and find a solution to what they were and will be.
Very good synopsis, Mike.
What do we think?
Well, I'll go if you want. I took one look at this, at like the cover page. I watched this from Sky. And I went, oh, I cannot believe you put this on. And then I saw from the creators of Downton Abbey, and I went, I really can't believe
it. Oh, is it? Okay. That makes more sense. Yeah.
So it's a, anyway, I think HBO produced it, but it's, you know, they have some agreement, some IP sharing agreement with Sky. Anyway, I did like it though. Right. I did like it. It's very like Dangerous Liaisons nearly, but not, it's not as focused on the liaisons. It's more about the, you know, it's not focused on liaisons of a sexual nature. It's about, like you described, Mike, the intricacies of high society, right? I really liked seeing this setting in this period, because I don't think it's something that you see a lot of. Manhattan before really it had become Manhattan, you know. But after it was the Wild West or whatever, I suppose. It was never the Wild West, it's been the East, but hopefully you know what I mean. So I did enjoy that. I see that fucking disaster from Sex and the City is in this as well. But she's actually well cast.
She's quite good in it.
I was just going to say, this role actually really suits her. So she's playing like the well-off, but not well-able aunt, I suppose, of our main character. And she's pretty good. But anyway, look, to get into what I thought they did a couple of things really well, right? They showed us very quickly what it's like to have no money and how you can't, and the powerlessness of that, right? And then it also painted a fairly stark picture of, I guess, the difference between the sexes as well, right? Because there's a lot of that in this. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like, I'm hardly a history buff, but it does seem to reflect that period. So, but there's obviously a couple of women in there who are set to break the mold and starting to do so already. And I really enjoyed, I'll never think of the name, I'll look it up here, but the main character, I guess our audience proxy.
Marion Brooke.
Carrie Coons.
Marion Brooke, yeah, playing Louisa. So she's our audience
proxy. The other way around. Louisa Jacobson is playing Marion Brooke, right? Brooke is her surname in it. Her dad is Brooke.
Yeah, Louisa Jacobson is her name. So she's Louisa. So the character Marion arrives in New York and starts to get to know her aunts, Agnes Van Rijn, from The Good Wife and a bunch of other things. And Cynthia Nixon playing Ada, who I've already given out about as being from Sex and the City.
Hilarious, huh? Yeah. I didn't recognize her at the time. Mm-hmm.
They're really good though. So,
yeah, they are.
So the aunts are there kind of saying, oh, this is the way it is, right? And Louisa's character, Marion, is like raising an eyebrow at everything, which she's not quite ready yet to tell them that they're full of nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's coming. And she's already started to paint outside the lines. And I thought that was really well done, because she's acting exactly like someone in her situation would.
Yeah, yeah. And
so I guess I say this every week, but there's a potential for great stories to be told here, because we've got such realistic, rich characters in an interesting setting. So it's just like, release them now and let's see what magic they make. Right. So yeah, I liked it. I'm probably going to watch more of it, I would say.
Did you know the ostracized socialite lady?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you see who plays her? It's Jeannie Triplehorn. Do you remember her? From back in the day.
I don't
Oh, you would. Mike would anyway.
I looked her up to see what I knew her from.
She was in The Leftovers.
She was in The Firm, The Waterworld, Sliding Doors, Basic Instinct. She was Dr. Beth Gardner in Basic Instinct. I don't know, we're probably showing her age here. Yeah, you definitely know her. Yeah. So Yeah, I was surprised this was on the list, but pleasantly surprised. It turned out.
You liked it as well, then.
I enjoyed this. Yeah, despite my better judgment. No, it's strong. It's got strong characters. It's got a strong story. Production is amazing.
Spent a lot on this.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. I guess they had all the costumes left over from their previous endeavors. but like the houses, the setting, it's just down. The whole social interaction is perfect as well. And, you know, they've got a bit of a stiff upper lip thing going on as well. You know, the whole Puritan, like you're saying, old money stuff. I think they have that down, but not forcing it too much. I love that there's new characters coming in, the people that are trying to integrate with the social scene, let's say, the new people, the Russells. Mm-hmm. And I think Mrs. Russell is an awesome character. I think she's brilliant. She's just a total micromanager, but she knows what she's what she wants, and she's going to get it. Her husband, the railroad tycoon, also good. I'd rather be a bastard than a fool. Brilliant line.
So she's the younger sister of Vera Farmiga.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Miss Russell, Tysa Farmiga.
That's interesting. All right, okay, yeah. Yeah. Who else was good in this? Marion Brooke, that character, class. Kind of remind me of... what's her name? Would like want to say Armstrong. Do you remember that series recently where it was sci-fi where the world was sterile, I think, except for some.
And they Children of Men?
No, they kept these women.
Why the Last Man?
They kept these women as for reproduction. They dressed in those kind of hooded things. Do you not remember that?
Handmaid's Tale.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. You know, the main character.
I was starting to worry that this was a nightmare you had.
She's very like her, I thought. I was kind of, is that, what's her name? She's really good. Peggy Scott is excellent. George Russell. How do we know him?
Couldn't tell you.
He was in Boardwalk Empire and Homeland. That's how I know him, actually. Yeah, he's really good in this.
Were you talking about Elizabeth Moss? Is that who you meant?
Yes, that's who I meant. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, she's like
And I thought it was a great story, just even from, you know, there was no fat on this story, if you know what I mean. From the start, you didn't get bogged down into funeral arrangements and debts and blah blah blah. You were just told the father died. You know, and you're very, and the meeting with the lawyer is very quick and just like to the point, you know.
And they're pretty good at showing the import of that. I think that's a really good comment.
I think it's really good. Yeah. And showing the that's not trivial to travel back in the day, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You know, I thought it was really good. And I actually thought it's a long episode. Because when I started, I went, oh, this is a movie.
Quite long. Yeah. It is quite long.
And then as it got closer to the end, I was going, wait a minute, they better hurry it up. They're very more to this. But yeah, no, I like this. I'm going to watch more of this.
Yeah, they do a really good job of grounding you in the circumstances without making you feel stupid, like without having to do these big expositions that we give out about a lot, you know, where someone appears and then starts to tell their life story to people who already know it. Right? They just let you see a little vignette that tells you all you need to know cleverly. I think it's really good. It's a really good show like that.
And then through the dust, I saw him disappear down the avenue. And I knew that time that
I knew
he
that
weren't
would
coming
be,
back.
I knew that it would be dark for the sun had gone down.
Mike.
No more than you guys. This is not my cup of tea. I didn't like Downton Abbey. I never watched, you know, I watched a couple of episodes because I had to, but it wasn't my thing. And then I saw this coming on and I thought, okay, let's have a little look-see here. Mm-hmm. And I was astonished. It was brilliant. I never thought I would hear myself say that.
I know, right?
A show like this.
Yeah.
I mean, you were talking about the setting. I did just in the early part of the show, they walk into the building and I thought it was an apartment block. And I was like, this is your fucking house.
It's like the National Concert Hall, you know, you know.
And then they're sending invites to their neighbors, or like the Vanderbilts and the Astors. Like, what the actual fuck? And Carrie Coons from Leftovers, that kind of was my gateway drug to get into the show.
Oh, really?
Because she was magnificent in that series. And she plays a bitch fantastically well. And I think she's going to be legendary in this. And, you know, because of my, you know, fold your arms, fucking, I'm not going to watch this shite sort of attitude towards these things, I decided to be a little more scientific about this. So I got two people that I knew that were hardcore Downton Abbey fans. And I actually manhandled them into watching it as like non-biased people. And they absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
It was like putting on an old pair of socks. It was like,
yeah.
What's the old Hollywood saying? Give me the same thing, only different. They were fucking sold. It was like, yeah, let's go take it from here. I thought it was beautifully made, really well acted, very well written. The crisis at the end of episode one is just setting up the whole series,
isn't it?
I just can't wait to see how that plays out. There's some serious fucking revenge coming in there.
Hashtag drama. got so a nice dose of upstairs, downstairs as well there for you.
Yeah, a little bit.
The Irish RM.
Yeah. So despite my better judgment, I'd have to say this is a watch.
I know. Same. Yeah. Jeez, wow. So the zombie ones this week, we're sort of going, eh. Jeez, this is a bit of a turnaround. What's wrong with us, lads?
I just don't know anymore. I feel like you've changed, you guys.
Monsters and zombies. You know, you've just changed, guys. Yeah. Wow. So that's okay. It's a definite from all three of us. I'm shocked.
Who would have saw that coming?
On that shocking news. We'll leave it there, I think, for this week. Back next week. What was it you say, Mark?
The Tinder Swindler.
Yeah. Maybe Pam and Tommy will see. Okay, so from Mike, Mark, and Steve, stay classy.